Anyway, this is a song that I wrote years ago. We talked about Métis songs, and I'm pretty proud of Métis, and everybody should be proud of who they are.
That smooth as silk voice belongs to the legendary Ray St. Germain, entertaining one of his many audiences over his long music career.
Ladies and gentlemen, Ray St. Germain.
The country star was affectionately known as Winnipeg's Elvis. With his pompadour hair, dimpled smile, and smooth baritone voice, it was easy to see why. But Ray was also mighty proud to be Métis.
I wrote this song many, many years ago, about 40 years ago, as a matter of fact. And I wrote it, and it started getting plays across Canada, especially in the West. And Ottawa brought me to Ottawa and awarded me the Aboriginal Order of Canada. For writing that. Thank you. I was really pleased to get that. And then the Tommy Hunter Show producer called me and he said, you know, Ray, he said, I've been reading in the paper, in the trade papers, that this song of yours is really starting to do well. He said, we'd like you to come on the Tommy Hunter Show and do this song you wrote called Amidas. Anyway, I said, sure. It goes like this.
The Métis was one of Ray St. Germain's biggest hits, and he sang it proudly during a time when many Métis were not. The boy who grew up in Winnipeg's St. Vital neighborhood emerged as a country and rockabilly musician. But soon he expanded into everything from gospel to rock and roll, and of course, the king himself. Ray was a true entertainer. Included in his many accolades is his induction into the Canadian Country Music Hall of Fame, the Order of Manitoba, the Aboriginal Order of Canada, and many, many more. Ray St. Germain passed away on June 25th after living with Parkinson's disease for several years. He was 83. Today, we'll hear stories and songs of the late, great Ray St. Germain. Guiding us through is Glory St. Germain. Glory and Ray spent 50 years together. Their love story began with a glance across a crowded room. It turned into a lifetime of dancing, music, laughter, and joy. As their love grew, so did their family, and so did the music. Glory, welcome to Unreserved. Thank you so much for being here.
Oh, thank you, Rosanna. It's an honor to be here.
I'm so pleased that we're able to talk to my good friend and your great love, Ray Ray.
Yes.
Well, let's start at the beginning of your amazing love story. Take me back to that day at the Miss Manitoba pageant.
Yes. Oh, I remember it like it was yesterday. He was singing Girl from Ipanema. And I was modeling in the fashion show, and he just looked at my eyes, and I looked at him, and I still remember I was wearing a yellow dress, and, you know, 19, and I just like, oh my God, his dimples are so amazing, and his voice just captivated me, and that's how we met, and it was not too long after that that he actually proposed to me backstage at the Miss Manitoba pageant. And Lorraine Gauthier, who won the pageant, you know, she posted, wow, you know, 50 years ago I was crowned Miss Manitoba. And we were all friends. It was a competition, but actually we were just girls having fun. And I said, well, you might have won Miss Manitoba, but I won the love of my life.
Mm. And what was the date of that?
It was June the 25th. And that day was 50 years to the day that Ray passed away.
Wow.
Yeah, I think he planned everything.
As he did.
Yeah.
He's a big planner.
Yes.
What were Ray Ray's moves? Give me some, what did he come up and sidle up to you, or what happened there?
Yeah, well, he did. You know, we just had a connection. You know, we were both passionate about music, and we really saw a vision for what was possible. And I mean, just when you look back at that time, it was BC, you know, before computers, before cell phones. And for a while, I was living in Regina. And so we had to write each other love letters, which I still have to this day in my jewelry box. And one in particular, he said, you know, show this to our grandkids on our 60th wedding anniversary. And, you know, we didn't quite make it to 60. But he was a romantic. He was a lot of fun, always spontaneous. And I think that's why we had so much fun. You know, we would travel, and I remember him coming home one night and saying, we're going to Disneyland like tomorrow. And I went, tomorrow? And it actually took us 2 days, but it was just kind of how we lived our life. Always just, let's just go for dinner and, you know, flowers for no reason. And he was a romantic, and we danced every day together. You know, no one saw, but in the kitchen, and he sang to me every day. Our house was always full of music, even as he was writing the Métis, I'm Mighty Proud of Métis. You know, you'll know that it's me, which, of course, is so dear to my heart now. He actually wrote that when his father passed. So, you know, sometimes you don't know what lies ahead, and it's actually a good thing. I like to live my life without knowing. Just be present, you know, as I am right now with you.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
What was your favorite thing about Ray? For me, it was, you know, his generosity and his big heart, and he always had time for people. And he always had, hey, kid, you know.
Yeah,
well, what about for you?
I think for me, it was absolute love, really love. Like, he was, okay, I'm trying not to go there, right? But he was the love of my life. And, you know, we hugged every day. I told him a million times a day I loved him and he did me. And we used to have this little thing, you know, we'd hug no matter if it was in the hallway or wherever. And we used to play this little thing like, who's the first to let go? And so sometimes the hug would be a while because, like, oh, I'm not going to let go first. And, you know, but I think it was just, he was such a genuinely wonderful person. And he did care. He cared about his family. He cared deeply about me. He always said, I'm so proud of you. And, you know, even on when he took his last breath, you know, he'd still like, I love you. I love you. You know, so it's kind of what keeps me going sometimes.
Yeah. It's a great and rare thing to have that kind of love that you have.
It's true.
Mm-hmm. In the early 70s, you know, Ray's music was hitting the charts with songs like Please Don't Hurt Me, Any Way You Want Me. What do you remember about him from those, you know, those early days when he was rising up in the music scene?
Yeah, you know, one of the things that was important to him was always to be professional 100%. You know, he always would shine his shoes before every performance. And I said, why are you doing that? And he said, well, because I'm on stage and people see my shoes first. And mm-hmm. they got to know that I'm a pro all the way. And, you know, I sewed many of his outfits. I can't believe he actually wore them, which is hilarious because I'm not a beater, but I did do my best. And on the album cover is actually a suit that I, like, did the little beading on it. And I look back and I went, oh, it's so bad. But he wore it, you know, just proudly as he would. But he was well rehearsed. I mean, for him, even today, as I was coming to meet you, I was half an hour early because if you're not 30 minutes early, then you're actually late. So he was the ultimate professional, and his friends knew it. And he loved that in this day and age, you can actually, you know, grow a business and make a living and support your family with music. But you've got to take a chance. Like, you've got to keep going and live your passion, live your dream, and also know what is expected of you from the audience. And he knew that, you know, he sang all kinds of music, you know, from jazz, big band stuff in Toronto and country. And of course, he didn't even find his Métis roots until many years later in life. And that's when he went, finally, I understand who I am.
Mm-hmm. Where did this work ethic of his come from?
You know, as I said, back in the day, you know, no cell phones, no nothing. I mean, if you really wanted to get ahead, you had to hustle. And it was such an incredible opportunity that he could actually make a living performing 6 nights a week, doing television shows, recording albums, and, you know, selling albums. And here's a little joke just for you and me, Rosanna. So he would be doing shows, and of course I was his manager, and I would be selling the CDs, you know. Well, actually, back in the day, I think we still had albums out back when we first started. And then it was 8 tracks, and then it was CDs. And then later it was just like, oh, go download it on the internet, which I still don't like. I like the physical copy. But we had a little joke, and he called me Lucy. And like Lucy, like from Lucille Ball. And so he'd look at me and he'd say, Lucy, is it going to be McDonald's or Heinz? Meaning like, how much do we sell? But that's all. And I'd say, oh, baby, we're going to Heinz. And he'd like, yes. So he knew, you know, I had to become good at sales because that was the gas money to get home. Right.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, yeah. Mm-hmm. Of course, he also hosted TV, Big Sky Country, for 13 years.
Yeah. Well, that's it for Big Sky Country. We have to go because, you know, it's starting to rain. I'd like to thank all the folks around Saskatchewan who let us.
What was he like as a host and an entertainer and, you know, writing TV and booking interviews and acts and stuff?
Yeah, well, we lived out in the country in Oak Bank. And fortunately, there was another house on the property, which became Ray's office. And so he would go there and he would write. And they actually did some of the TV series there as well. But when you see him speaking, you know, he spoke so eloquently and so from the heart. And this is also the BC time, meaning before like teleprompters and all the rest of that. You had to know your script. And they were all so shot outdoors. And one of the things that Ray absolutely loved was going exploring for locations for his television show. He got into places that people had never shot television before, in museums and in, you know, the forks here and there. And it was just because they loved him and they went, it's going to be fine. It's Ray St. Germain, you know. So he got into a lot of places where they'd never had television cameras before. And but he was passionate about doing it, and it was about the music, and I think it was a family show. And back then, there wasn't a lot of television stations, right? So you're either watching Ray St. Germain or Ray St. Germain. Like those were your choices.
That's right. And that's okay.
And that's
okay with that.
Yeah. It was a lot of fun.
Do you remember how that show came to be? I mean, because he's a stage musician, right? And he's touring and making music appearances. How do you then go from that to, I think I'll have a TV show now for 13 years?
Yeah, absolutely. I remember it well. He went into a meeting with Stan Thomas, who was the manager of CKND. At the time, now it's Global Network. And he just said, I have an idea. And you know, it's so different now, because back then you walked in, you had a handshake, you went to the golf course, you know, you had a meal together, you made a decision, and then it happened.
Yeah.
And they did a pilot. And, you know, you try it out to see if it'll be okay. Well, not only was it okay, they actually won an award for the pilot of the show. They absolutely loved it. And then he went on to go to Saskatchewan. And then he became the host of that show as well. And then it went national. It was Ray St. Germain Country when they first started it. And then it went Big Sky Country as they went national. And, of course, it was on the Global Network. Doing Big Sky Country wasn't his first television show. You know, he was also on Music Hop Hootenanny, like he did so many others, with Anne Murray and Time for Living. And, like, he's done a lot of television shows. So it was just like, I got to do one more. And he did. And it was always exciting. That's actually the time that he woke me up and said, we're going to Disneyland tomorrow, is he came home from working at the Ramada, and he had just signed a contract for another season. And then he went, we're going to Disneyland. So I said, okay, let's go. Yeah.
You're listening to a special episode of Unreserved, a tribute to the life and music of Ray St. Germain. I'm Rosanna Deerchild. We'll be back to talk more with Glory St. Germain later in the show. Back when I started in radio, my first job was at NCI-FM. The Manitoba Radio Network served most of the province's First Nations. One of the many weird and wonderful people I had the privilege to work with was Ray. Or as I came to call him, Ray Ray, because he was so cool you had to say his name twice. NCI boss and Indigenous music nerd Dave McLeod says Ray put a soundtrack to the rise of the Métis Nation. That the country music icon created a legacy rooted in identity, community, and upholding other musicians. We asked Dave to take us through a few of his favorite Ray St. Germain songs and tell us why his music had such an impact. At the top of his list, of course, the Métis.
He wrote the soundtrack for the Métis Nation.
The sound of laughter, the sound of guns.
He wrote the Métis in 1979. you know, when you look, reflect on those times, there wasn't a lot of artists that were recording history musically about Métis peoples, and he was. Louis Riel was his name. He talks about Louis Riel. He talks about the embattlement that took place and ultimately the price that Louis Riel paid for ensuring Métis people had rights and were recognized. Now, you could research something and then write it out on paper and have like a university type paper. But Ray took it and he also added a heart and soul to those stories. The public who heard it, it turned their attention to Métis history, identity, and also rights. And I think that's why that song is so important.
Not red enough, not white enough.
The song spectacularly ends with an operatic moment where Ray often stretched out his arms and the last words were, "The Métis." Ray didn't write this song, Dynamite Woman, but it became popular, particularly in Manitoba radio, and this would be country stations. This song kind of highlights his vocal ability, the fun in his voice. So much is in this song. This is a great song for all the lovers out there.
She's a dynamite woman, never gonna let her go, never let her go.
She's, I think, people connected with Ray's music because it felt genuine, it felt sincere, and also people talk about authenticity today quite a bit. Authenticity is so important, and particularly in this age of the internet, where people, you know, question a lot, and it seems. And Ray had an authenticity about him. When he came out, he was sincere. When he came out, he was prepared. He was early. He was professional, and he cared. Oh my gosh, She's a Square is such an important song, not only to Ray, but to rock and roll music history in Manitoba. The song was released in 1957. Who was huge in rock and roll in 1957? Well, there was a young man out of Memphis, Tennessee named Elvis Presley. And when Ray heard Elvis Presley, had a huge effect. Now, of course, it was a generational shift going on. So this had such a huge effect on Ray that he put down his accordion and picked up the guitar. He wanted to be part of this. So skip ahead, he's learning guitar, he's writing songs, and he writes a song, She's a Square, which is interesting because it was the first local rock and roll 45 that hit the top 10. And this is CKY we're talking about, with a local artist. And on the back of it was Ray's a Ruckus. And this song has that 1950s vibe, and you can listen to it over and over. And that's what happened. People wanted to hear this. And Ray was put on the charts, put on the stage, and definitely took the spotlight. And, you know, as a young Métis artist, you got to commend Ray for opening the doors for not only for Indigenous artists, but for all people who loved rock and roll at that time. You'll Know It's Me by Ray St. Germain is a beautiful song. And this song meant a lot to him. It's based on a Navajo legend he heard. He was thinking about the story. A hummingbird appeared. And then he said, I had to write this song. Because he didn't think it was coincidence that he was thinking about this story and this hummingbird appeared. And this song is about a bird that visits and carries the spirit, has the spirit of a person who left us.
If you see the same bird wherever you
listen to the lyrics and think about a loved one, this song is very special. And Ray knew it was special. I'm sure listeners will recognize it as special as well.
Look for that bird, you'll know that it's me.
Going back to the storytelling, I think there's an authenticity to it from Ray, and it comes from a good place, and that will certainly not fade off with time. I think it's going to continue for many decades ahead.
We'll never forget, and the love that we shared, we'll never look for me this morning, and I will be there singing a love song to show how I care. The colors in the rainbow.
That is Ray St. Germain with You'll Know It's Me. And before that, David McLeod. He is the CEO of NCIFM and executive producer of the Indigenous Music Countdown. You're listening to a special episode of Unreserved, a celebration of the life, music, and Métis pride of Ray St. Germain.
Well, I woke up this morning and I jumped out of bed. I stared at the empty spot where Lucy laid her head. Now if you see...
Ray St. Germain started out as a country and rockabilly musician in the 50s. He shared the stage with the likes of Johnny Cash and Kenny Rogers. But some of the most memorable performances were surrounded by his very musical family. His wife and love of his life, Glory St. Germain, says that's where Ray's heart really was.
Let's talk about Ray, you know, as a father. How would you describe him as a dad?
You know, he's an incredible dad. Here's a father, he's got five kids, you know, and all of them sing.
Yes.
They grew up singing. And I often tell the story of how our youngest daughter, Sherry, had to do a project at school, Take Your Kid to Work Day. And so most of them are, you know, whatever, and they take their kids to the office. And so I got a call from the principal saying, your daughter made a presentation in front of the class about Take Your Kid to Work Day. And I said, yes. And she said, well, she said, I went to the bar with my dad. I learned a few new licks with the boys. I sat in, did some harmonies, did few solos, and then had an encore. And I went, yeah. And she was like, I said, well, that's all of our kids. And, you know, Crystal and Kathy and Raymond all performed on Big Sky Country television. And then DJ and Sherry also made an appearance, but they were like babies at the time. So, you know, they weren't singing. But when you look at the opportunity that all five of them have done, like the casinos shows, you know, they were produced by Kathy. And it was an incredible time, and it brought them together. You know, they would get together and have one rehearsal, and then tickety-boo, you take this, you take that. And it's just how they grew up.
Yeah.
It wasn't a fear like, oh, I'm so nervous. No. It's just how they grew up, was on stage and singing and laughing. You know, it was always fun. It wasn't like, oh, you know, I don't want to do this. It was like, no. I remember Kathy once said, well, do I have to do this? And Ray said, no. He said, but I'll pay you $50. And she goes, what time should I be there? You know, she was only 14 at the time. But yeah, she was in.
Now, you're a music teacher.
Yes. Yeah.
And he's a singer, performer, entertainer.
Yeah.
What was it like in your house when you're with these kids? You have these kids. Did he just like hand them a guitar one day? Did you sit them at the piano?
Yeah, Sherry, who's our youngest, she started formal piano lessons at the age of two with an actual music educator. So I was never their teacher. And so did DJ, and so did Raymond. I mean, they grew up with instruments, always was around them. So it was just a natural thing. It's kind of as if you cook a lot, and so your kids see you in the kitchen cooking, and so they kind of pull up a chair, stand on the chair, and help you cook. And that was what it was like for them. It was just like, oh, my dad's singing, and then, you know, I'll just go sing with them. So it was just kind of a natural thing. And I still love it when all five kids and our grandkids too. So mm-hmm. Jeff, who's in living in Vegas with Sherry and, you know, David and Katie, who of course is here, you know, being a superstar too. She's carrying on the legacy, you know, so it's incredible. And so is Kathy and Crystal.
Just reams of talent in that family.
Yeah.
So much talent.
Actually, one of the things that our kids shared with us is that they grew up in a musician's world where all of our musician friends were aunties and uncles. Mm. We weren't a get a babysitter and leave your kid at home kind of thing. They came everywhere with us. So when we look at old videos, they're performing on the stage at all of these parties, whether Ray was doing a show in Morden at the Corn and Apple Festival or the Morris Stampede. You see Crystal and Kathy on stage. You see Ray Jr. in Tinkertown riding a little train. And just the fact that we got to go to Nashville to see Ray Jr., who's living there, and Ray got to get on the Grand Ole Opry stage. And like just those memories are so embedded. And as we were preparing for Ray's celebration of life, we had to go through thousands of pictures. And I think for, you know, if we have any musicians, you know, that are listening, you have to take a step forward. And Ray always did. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he often would say, if you really want to go big, like get the heck out of Winnipeg or make a decision and then go after it. Because so many times people settle for things rather than going after their dreams. And he would go after it. But, you know, he did the work.
He did write an autobiography, ironically, saying how to get out of Winnipeg. And the autobiography is called I Wanted to Be Elvis. So what was I doing in Moose Jaw?
You know, that's an interesting story because he was writing his book. And this is like barely at the time that computers came out where you would forget to hit the save button. And I remember him writing all night. And he said, wrote all night. I said, uh-huh. And he said, shut off my computer. And I said, uh-huh. And he said, and I forgot to hit save. I went, oh no. And I said, well, go sleep and then get back to writing before, you know, while it's still fresh in your mind. So he said, yeah, but he loved to tell stories and, you know, it's a collector's item now.
It is. I have a copy.
Yeah. I'll have to see if I can somehow get it onto, you know, Amazon or something, but
share it
out
with the world.
Yeah, you bet. You bet.
You know, as well as being a prolific musician, entertainer, wonderful human being, he's received many honors, including the Order of Manitoba, Aboriginal Order of Canada, Order of the Sash. In 2010, he was inducted into the Canadian Country Music Hall of Fame. Do you have a sense of what those honors meant to him?
Oh, huge. Absolutely huge. And I mean, our home is the walls, and I say walls because it's not just one, but actually two walls, covered with plaques and awards and trophies and, you know, Entertainer of the Year, Songwriter of the Year, you know, Album of the Year. It just, the list goes on. And it always meant a lot to him. But then, of course, being the jokester that he was, he'd always say, how come there's no check in them, like goes with the, you know, the award kind of thing. But he was just always grateful that he was honored. And I have a story for you. We were at the legislative buildings and he was receiving the Order of Manitoba. So we're all sitting there, you know, very prim and proper with our lovely suits on. And he was being presented with the award. And so everything is very quiet, right? And he's standing at the front waiting for this presentation. And the gentleman said, he said, yes. And, you know, when Ray has written this book called I Wanted to Be Elvis, you know, so what was I doing in Moose Jaw? And of course, all we see is Ray's back. And we're all sitting there with the speaker facing us. And he is standing in front. And of course, he just couldn't resist it. And he went into his Elvis moves, you know, his little butt wiggling there and the, you know, hands going out like Elvis. And of course, the whole place just cracked up. And I went, yeah, that's typical. It's probably the only time anyone's laughed in the middle of one of these presentations.
Glory St. Germain is the co-author of a 50-year love song. We'll hear from her again a little later in the show. As we remember Ray St. Germain, he passed in June at 83 years old.
Under the lambs on my mama's back. My daddy European, my mama's swampy Cree, and I'm mighty proud I'm 18.
Every week for 23 years, you could hear Ray on the radio.
Mystery lover, Donna and Harvey Henry. Everybody used to think Donna and Harvey Henry were related. And of course,
that's what I thought.
Yeah, nope, not at all. Not at all, but both good singers. Donna, of course, from Flin Flon, Manitoba. And,
yay,
you know, that's
Donna.
that's where Cowboy Carl is from, too.
No, he's not.
No, he was there for a while.
He lived there for a while.
Well, yeah.
He's not from there.
Oh, well, where's he from?
He's from Ontario somewhere.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
No, I think he told me the last time.
Ray St. Germain hosted the Métis Hour times two for 23 years. And no one can speak better to that experience than his co-host for those two decades, Naomi Clark. While sharing the airwaves, they became friends. And more than that, they became family. Naomi, welcome to Unreserved.
Thank you. Oh, I'm so honored to be here.
What's it like listening back to that clip?
Oh, it just brings a smile to my face. You know, I miss that man so much. It just kind of reminds me that I won't be seeing him in the physical form anymore. But I know that he's always going to be there on Saturday mornings, you know, with us doing the Métis Hour. I know he'll always be a part of that show. And we do our best to honor him each and every week,
mm-hmm.
playing his music, always making him a part of the show. And that when he handed over the reins of the show, you know, it was like, okay, we'll call you every Saturday just so that you can be a part. Because I wasn't ready to let go at that point either, right?
Yeah.
And neither was he, so...
Well, he was such a big part of the show and part of the Métis community, right? And he was such a big force. I remember his giant personality only matched by his big hair. but let's go back to the beginning when you met Ray St. Germain. I understand we've heard you be cordial and lovely on the air together, and you've got such good rapport and a good relationship, and the love kind of spills over in your voices. But I understand that wasn't always the case.
He might not have been too fond of me, and I might not have been too fond of the fact that Ray St. Germain was coming to work at NCI. Just because I hadn't known the man before, this was going to be my first introduction to him. And I remember program manager Dave McLeod was like, oh my gosh, this legend is coming to work at NCI FM. And I was just sour because we were in, you know, Thompson and Winnipeg at that time, but limited on how many hours of programming could come out of Winnipeg, and I couldn't be on the air. But then all of a sudden swoops in Ray St. Germain, and he's going to be on the air, and he's this legend, and I'm going to train him. And I was like, I bet you he's going to have this huge ego. He's going to want me to get him coffee and do his dry cleaning and all that fun stuff. And I was so wrong. First and foremost, I was so wrong. What you see with Ray when you meet him, you know, was what you got. He's totally friendly. He's totally down to earth. Really no ego whatsoever, and always made you feel important. So it was a surprise to meet him. But at the same time, you know, we have this one story where I had two kids. I was a single mother. Have to be at daycare by 5:30 or else, right? Mm-hmm, if you're late a minute, it cost you $15. Back then, that was a lot of money for me. And I think it was the third day of training of him being on the air live from Winnipeg. And I was like, dude, I got to go. Like, nobody can pick up the kids today. I have to leave at 5:10 in order to make it there on time. And so he was quite sour. I heard later that I had left him, up and left him, just to the wind. And I said, well, welcome to NCI, because sometimes that's how we train people. Sink or swim.
As I know, I am aware of that.
It happened to all of us.
Lots of good memories from NCI. But you didn't start off as a co-host with Ray. Can you tell me about those early days? How would a typical show have gone in those early days?
In those really early days, it was pre-recorded for one. So we would sit in the studio and I was the board operator. So he did his show, he did his shtick, and I pushed all the buttons that needed to be pushed. And then one week he just started to throw in a question at me like, hey, what do you think of this? And so I'd answer, and that was that. And then, you know, next week it was two questions. And then a few weeks later it was three questions. And then before you know it, I was part of the show. It wasn't something that went like, oh, hey, do you want to be my co-host? Mm-hmm. You know, here are the details. Here's, you know, the fine print. So it just really happened organically.
Yeah.
And it was really fun. And then we went live and we started taking calls, and that was lots of fun. And then 1 hour wasn't enough, so we had to make it two.
Thus the Métis Hour times two.
I know, and we were so creative with our naming. It was like the Métis Hour. Yeah, sounds great. And then they're like, now it's going to be 2 hours. And it's like, well, now we can't call it the Métis 2 hours. What are we going to do? And then we're like, let's come up with a name. And then that was the best we could do.
And when you went live and started taking calls from mostly the Métis community, because, of course, NCI was heard all across Manitoba, what kind of impact do you think the Métis Hour had on listeners?
Oh, my goodness. It was the only call-in program that we had back then at that time. And it was just huge, you know, to see the impact for people to be able to say hello. You know, we still get the calls, you know, hey, can you have Joe call so-and-so, right, in the community, which, you know, just makes it, it's just such a community-based form of radio, and you don't get a lot of that. So it's really nice. And we have our regular callers, and, you know, a lot of our callers became our friends over the years because they would call in every Saturday, and they would be at every event.
Yeah. Who are some of your favorite, like, characters that would call in regularly?
Oh, characters. Oh, my goodness. There's been so many. Adria is one because we used to call her our roving reporter. She used to be at all the events, and she'd call in and tell us everything. We had Vicky and her mother, who would come down every Saturday to the McPhillip Street Station, and we got to know them really well. And, you know, getting those calls from 10, 11, 12-year-olds, you know, are really just satisfying and nice to know, right? Because when I think of the Métis Hour, sometimes I think a lot of our listeners are a little bit older.
Yeah.
You know, and to have those 10, 12, 11-year-olds come calling in to say hi and, like, keep that tradition going is really fantastic.
Do you think Ray knew the impact and the effect that he had when, you know, he walked into a room or he was on the air or when he was just interacting with people?
I think Ray was really just looking for a way to connect with the community still because he had stopped touring, you know, to spend more time at home with family and the kids. And I think he was just really looking for a way to connect with the community, to really uplift artists, because that was the whole point of it, too, was to just, like, hey, you know, we need a place where we can feature Métis artists because there is a lot of talent in the Métis community. And we need a place and a venue because he knew how hard the music industry was. And it just kind of, you know, overflowed into the communities where all this Métis pride was being instilled, right? Because it's like, hey, there's our artists. I know that person who's singing. That person is from our community. It really uplifted people. And so I think that was a really important push for him, was to make sure that Métis people were accepted in this community. And I think the Métis Hour might not have been his original vision, but that's what it transformed into.
Yeah.
You know, he touched so many people. He mentored so many people. And he just always made you feel like you were the most important person on earth. Even though he was this big Manitoba music legend, Canadian Country Music Hall of Famer, he always made you feel like you were the important one and you were the special one. And I think that's what his legacy is going to be, just that he uplifted people, not only with his music, but by how he treated them. And I think that will be forever his legacy. The man gets inducted into the Canadian Country Music Hall of Fame, and he talks about being on the Métis Hour. And then he mentions me. I'm like, I had nothing to do with your music career. What an honor, right? Like, that's what I meant. Little things like that he did. And I've heard stories from countless people, you know, since his passing and since he's been sick, that they remember us being the first one to interview them, or they remember, you know, such and such a time when he performed, you know. And he always got calls going, oh, I remember seeing you in 1956. Do you remember when you were in Cranberry Portage, or, you know, stuff like that. So, I mean, he touched people's lives, and people remember that.
Yeah. I will always remember Ray and love him and hold him in my heart. I remember the last time we went, one of the last time we went for dinner with him.
Oh, I remember that.
And we sat together and had some charcuteries, and then he stood up and he sang for us.
He did. He did get up and sing for us. And, you know, that was always, you know, we didn't know how many performances he had left in him. And so it was always special, especially around those times, for him to get up and sing when, you know, he wasn't totally feeling up to it. Mm. Mm-hmm. He always left a mark wherever he went. And I'll forever be grateful, you know, for the time I got to spend with him. And I was blessed because I got to spend a lot more time with him than other people did. I miss his stories, you know, of being on the road. I think I can recite a few.
Yes, I was going to say.
I could probably recite some of his stage show, too. But they never got old, you know, hearing those stories. And I'll forever cherish those in my heart.
Because he had love in every word, right?
He did.
Yeah. Naomi, thank you so much for spending this time with me.
Thank you, Rosanna. As it was an honor to be asked to be a part of this.
Naomi Clark is the co-host of the Métis Hour Times 2 on NCIFM.
Play me an old-fashioned song, a kind we can sing along with words like love.
You're listening to a special episode of Unreserved, a tribute to the life and music of Ray St. Germain. I'm Rosanna Dearchild. Earlier this fall, I sat down with Glory St. Germain to talk about the great entertainer and her greatest love. We talked about music, family, and being Métis. Ray didn't grow up knowing he was Métis, but Glory says when he did find his Métis heritage, he really found himself.
He was sort of an amateur photographer and taking and developing pictures. And he happened to develop a picture of his grandfather. And he looked at the picture and he thought, my grandfather looks Native. Like, what is this all about? And so he went to his mother and showed her the picture, and he said, do we have like Native, like First Nations? Like, what is this picture? Like, it was so distinct, you know? And his mom said, well, actually, yes, you're Métis. And he said, well, how come no one ever told me about that? So he really started to go back into his roots and discover, like, where do I come from? And all of a sudden, things started to make sense for him. And he really wanted to know more about himself. Actually, it's in the book, Ray's story about how he realized that he was Métis and he was very proud to be Métis. And back then, you know, it was like, shh, 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 you know, don't say anything, don't say anything. And he said, are you kidding? I'm going to tell the world who I am. And he was very proud to be Métis and always wore his sash and, you know, for anybody who asked. And it was just a part of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, for people who don't understand that a lot of Métis people didn't come forward as Métis.
Absolutely.
Back in the 70s and in the 60s. Why was it significant for Ray to express his pride at that time?
I think it's because he often felt different. Mm-hmm. And he was also called half-breed. And he said, well, perhaps that's a biological fact of how I came to be, but I am Métis. And he was proud of that. And it was always about encouraging young people to speak their mind, to be proud of who they are. You know, Ray used to joke when he was on stage and he'd say, well, he said, our kids are M&Ms. And people would go, what are you talking about? And he'd say, they're Mennonite Métis. So we call them M&Ms. But it doesn't matter what your culture is. And it's why he wrote songs about the Métis, so that you could be proud of who you are. And, you know, no one is better than anyone else. Mm. We're all God's creatures. We're all equal.
Yeah.
And we need to celebrate our differences and educate each other about our life and learn. You know, Ray loved to learn, and so do I. I'm still a student, you know. Yeah.
Did he encounter, you know, racism after he came out as Métis, or did you encounter racism as a mixed couple?
I don't think so. Ray was pretty personable. It was pretty hard to, like, say anything that wouldn't recognize that. And I think it's how he presented himself. I think it's if you present yourself as, oh, poor me, you know, I don't have this, I don't have that, I'm Métis, I grew up poor. That was him. But he didn't say it like that. He said, oh, yeah, I grew up poor, but I had dreams and I went after them and I'm mighty proud I'm Métis. So it's how you present yourself. He was about making a difference, you know, going after his dream. Yeah, television. Yeah, like winning all these awards. They don't come from not stepping forward. You know, he also received an honorary degree from Red River Community College for his gift and contribution to the industry. Well, they're not just going to give that out because you're going, oh, I never got to, you know, finish high school. doesn't matter. It's what you do with your life that makes a difference.
Mm-hmm. As you mentioned earlier, on June 11th, a street in Winnipeg was named in honor of Ray, Big Sky Country Way. After the show he hosted for so many, you know, years, he sang, you know, beautifully on that occasion. Like, I watched it and tears. What does that moment tell us about Ray?
Oh, my goodness. You know, he was always the consummate professional. When I was getting him ready for that street signing, you know, it was about getting his hair done. And even though he wasn't well, I brought his suit jacket and I wanted to make him feel like the man that he deserves to be recognized as.
Yeah.
And he always sang, like, It's Now or Never. That was his signature closing song, always. And at this point, even as we were driving to the event, he could barely speak. It was very quiet. He hadn't eaten in a week. We knew that things were declining rapidly, but it was an honor that he could be there. And as all of our children were there performing, Ray said to me, and he was in the wheelchair, and he said, I want to sing. And I'm like, uh-oh, like, how's this going to go? And I said, okay, are you sure? He goes, yeah. So I wheeled him over to beside my son, David, and I said, your dad wants to sing. And he kind of looked at me and he went, seriously? Like, he can hardly speak. Like, oh, dear, how's this going to go? And I went, I don't know. So he said to Ray, what do you want to sing? And he said, It's Now or Never. So we were like, okay. And then all of a sudden it was like he was transformed back to being like 50 years old. And he just went into this performer mode.
Kiss me, my darling. Please be mine tonight.
And to the fact that he hit the money note at the end, I had to turn around because I was crying. I couldn't even, I was in shock. And he was then just so proud of himself that one more time is what he said to me. One more time. Right after that, he said, we have to go. And then we got back in the van and went back to the hospital, and he had to go right to bed. And then, and then a week later he passed. Mm. And it was just, you know, he was so proud to be able to have that street signing. And on, like, St. Michael's Road, which is where he grew up, and it's also where all of his family is buried. And Ray was cremated, but we will have the burial in St. Vital, and we will do that next like summer, when the family can come back. Mm. Yeah.
What do you want people to remember about Ray?
Well, other than the music and his love of his family, I think to remember that anything is possible. Turn on some music. Ray St. Germain's music, and turn it up loud, and then dream big, and then just go do it. Don't wait for something to happen to you. You have to take a step. And that's why he did what he did. And that's why he accomplished all that he accomplished, is he stepped forward. It wasn't just all given to him. He had to go after it, and he did, in a big way.
Mm. As we end our conversation and our time together, we want to go out on some music performed at the celebration of life for Ray. This is Operator, Give Me Jesus on the Line. What's special about this performance?
Yeah. You know, it was something that we talked about as a family. What is a celebration of life? And the celebration for Ray was absolutely the music. And bringing the family together, and we had actually my son, DJ David, it put the show together and then reached out to, you know, all the family and friends and said, you know, do you want to be a part of this? And they're like, absolutely, we have to do this for Dad. And so Kathy and Sherry, who, you know, sang together, as did all of them, right? It was just their passion, and they said, we have to do this for Ray. And it's one of my favorite pieces. I mean, they've sang it many times together, obviously, but it's just so much fun when they can do it one more time. And they did it to honor Ray, to say, hey, Dad, you gave us these chops. You taught us, like, about harmonizing and singing and performing. And so this one is for you, honey.
One, two, three, operator, operator. Information. Oh, give me Jesus, on the line.
Is Operator, performed by the family of Ray St. Germain at the late musician's celebration of life at Winnipeg's Calvary Temple, led by Catherine St. Germain. A huge thanks and so much love to Glory St. Germain for spending so much time with us on Unreserved. And most of all, thanks to Ray Ray for all the music and memories. That's all our time on Radio Indigenous. This episode was produced by Kim Casher, Rhiannon Johnson, Bridget Stringer Holden, and Elena Hudgens Lyle. The songs from Ray St. Germain's Celebration of Life were mixed and provided by Aidan Penner with Sparrow Mastering. I'm going to leave you with a tearful celebration finale when family and friends all filled the stage for one last song. Until next time. I'm your favorite cousin, Rosanna Deerchild, coming at you from Winnipeg in Treaty 1 territory. Kinanaskamitnaya, I will say.